welcome to 2819. I'm Sandra Dimas.
And I'm Brian Rombacher.
And you might notice that...
Nothing's different.
Nothing is different. No, we're actually going to be talking about aliens. So just in case, we got our tinfoil hats on.
It's going to be a really fun episode, though.
Yes.
In RTB 101, Krista will be interviewing astrophysicist Hugh Ross on how awesome and important the moon is.
And in Give and Take, Jeff Swerink will be talking with biochemist Fuzzle Rana about the search for aliens and whether that requires intelligent design.
First up is Culture Talk. Sandra's going to be speaking with astrophysicist Jeff Swerink on how we can think through the government report on UFOs. Let's check it out.
Now it's time for Culture Talk. This is a segment where we discuss culturally relevant topics that you can use to start conversations about your faith. And I'm joined today with astrophysicist Jeff Swerink. Thank you for joining me.
Sandra's looking forward to our conversation.
I know. We're going to be talking about that UFO report that's going to be coming out. Actually, by the time this airs, it will have been out.
At least parts of it, yes.
Parts of it, yes. So you know what? What are people anticipating they're going to communicate in this report?
I don't know exactly, but given what I've seen is there are some videos of things that seem to be moving off of moving in the sky on cameras, radar images that show up. So I imagine it's a whole slew of things like that. Just throughout history, it seems like as fighter pilots and people have been up flying, they've seen stuff. And I think they're just releasing some of that so that more people see what's out there.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of excitement, not only for scientists, of course, mm-hmm. but also for just the general public, because in pop culture, we see constantly films and TV shows about UFOs and aliens. So there's a lot of curiosity about that. Now, from a Christian perspective, some would say that aliens actually are not physical beings, but spiritual beings. So if this report indicates that there are UFOs and that there, you know, that we can infer from that there are aliens, does that then debunk the theory that aliens are spiritual beings?
You know, I don't think so. And there's a lot in that question because first you have to show that what you're seeing is not some sort of physical phenomena. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the reality of it is we're dealing with the Department of Defense, military type stuff. And mm-hmm. so we know that there are other entities out there who are against our military and looking for ways to spoof stuff and figure out what sort of technology. So I bet there's a lot of stuff going on that we just are never going to find out because our government doesn't want to let out because it's part of how it's protecting us. And right. so I think there's a lot of that. But let's say we sort through all that. Now, you know, historically, as you go look a lot of those UFOs, as people go in and look, there's most of those have a physical explanation. You know, there's fires given off from oil rigs out in the ocean. There's stuff falling out of the sky from satellites, all sorts of things that have physical explanations. But you do seem to have this residual amount of, you know, maybe on the order of 1% that don't seem to be explained well. What's interesting about that 1% is that it seems like those are the 1% tend to have, when you're looking at them, the way they behave seems to defy the laws of physics.
Right.
Well, if you defy the laws of physics, you're no longer constrained to this physical world. And that kind of gives evidence of beyond the physical, more mm-hmm. spiritual or interdimensional beings.
Right.
And from a biblical perspective, that makes sense because the Bible tells us we're obviously creatures here, but God has created angels and demons as well. And right. so that all makes sense from a Christian perspective.
Right. Yeah, you know what? And that is definitely one perspective to have on this this issue. Another kind of thing that becomes an issue for Christians is that when we think that there are aliens, then that maybe affects how we view humans as being exceptional. So how would you respond to that?
Well, I think it's really important that nowhere in the Bible does it say that humans are exceptional and that's why we're valuable.
Right.
Specifically, what it says is we are created in God's image.
Right.
So if we are exceptional and that's what brings value, well, if we find other creatures that God might have created that are aware of God or created in his image some fashion, then that would diminish ours. You know, kind of the way I like it, you know, I've got a number of kids. You know, mm-hmm. if my oldest kid was special because they're unique, mm-hmm. the moment I had a second kid, they lose value. value. Right. Well, that's not right. They're valuable because they're my kids. Mm-hmm. We're valuable because we're created in God's image. Now, whether God has created other physical mm-hmm. beings out there or not, that's an open question, both theologically and scientifically. Fascinating question. But if we find other creatures out there, all that means is that God's created other creatures. And so that would no way diminish our value, because our value is from being in God's image, not being unique.
Right. You know what? And I haven't heard anyone articulate it in that way, that it isn't that we are exceptional necessarily, but that we're unique, that we're created in God's image. So mm-hmm. I think that's helpful, and a helpful distinction for those who feel like, oh, there can't be, because right. then that means we're like lower on the totem pole, so to speak.
Right, right.
So, you know, as Christians are exploring this idea, like the tendency might be to be a little bit scared of this sort of news, of the existence of UFOs and aliens. What would you say to someone who just feels like very uncomfortable about any news about aliens and UFOs?
The first thing I would say is just recognize there's a history of people claiming UFOs, and as we've investigated, they tend to have physical explanations that are far more mundane and less interesting than we would like them to be. You know, it's just interesting phenomena that we see. And, you know, I mean, especially dealing with this, you got fighter pilots pushing the envelope, high-tech radar. Mm-hmm. You're pushing the boundaries of things. You're going to see weird stuff. That's just right. kind of common thing. So most of this is going to be unusual right. or just weird explanations, but nonetheless mundane stuff. But from a Christian perspective, I look at this and say, you know what, we know the Bible describes the kind of world we live in. We live in a world where there's God's the creator, that he's created us. He's created us with a purpose. There's the angelic realm. We see the rebellion in the angelic realm, that angelic realm wants to destroy humanity. So realize that that's part of God's plan, whether there are aliens out there or not, that it's all part of God's plan. And what we know he's going to do through Christ's work on the cross and his coming, none of what we find in terms of aliens is going to influence
right.
that. So
yeah.
There's a great confidence I have as a Christian. Let's go out and explore. I think it's going to be fascinating. Yeah. I don't think we're going to find aliens if I had to bet on it, mm-hmm. but who knows? You know, who knows what God has done? Yeah. And so that's part of the fascination of doing science, is figuring out what God's done.
Yeah. Are you at all excited about, like, maybe they're going to, you know, give some sort of discovery or admit to some findings? Are you excited about anything in particular?
I don't think we're going to find anything unusual. I think we're going to find weird stuff mm-hmm. that is hard to explain, that would be fun to scientifically explore. Mm-hmm. But quite honestly, since this is coming from the military and government, I expect it to be something that suits their agenda to take care of our country. And
right.
so that would be my personal take on that. And I, you know, people are going to have lots of different takes. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see what's there, because people have been talking about
right.
it. I don't expect we're going to find evidence of aliens. I expect we're going to find evidence of technology that is beyond what we thought might be out there,
right.
but has been developed by either us or some other country here on the Earth.
Okay. Well, yeah, I like hearing your enthusiasm and your really just your confidence to explore. That's
mm-hmm.
a good perspective to have. So now the pressing question, what is your favorite extraterrestrial film or show?
You know, I think one of the ones that's fascinating to me was a movie called Signs.
Oh, yes.
And the reason why it was fascinating, and it's interesting because my kids have an entirely different perspective on
mm-hmm.
it. You know, you got Star Wars. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. things where aliens are real, but that was
right.
the first one where it's here on Earth where the alien actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, you know, I mean, maybe it's because I grew up on Scooby-Doo. All the aliens were always some sort of plot
yeah,
and ploy.
Yeah, those meddling kids.
This was the first one where it was actually real.
Yeah.
And so that's the one that I like, but I couldn't narrow it down to one. But that one is the one that comes to mind.
Nice. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for that. So where can people find more information on this topic?
I think specifically, if you want to go look at UFOs and what do you mean, my colleagues Ken Samples, Hugh Ross, Mark Clark have written a great book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. And you know what? If you want to get more information aside from that book, you can also check out Jeff Swearing's book, Is There Life Out There? Be sure to go to reasons.org and search for that.
Now it's time for RTB 101, where we discuss practical questions to equip you to share your faith more effectively. And here to talk about one of my favorite science topics, the miracle of the moon, is my colleague, Dr. Hugh Ross. Welcome, Hugh.
Well, thank you.
I love this topic.
I do too.
Well, we're going to have fun together. So maybe let's start with scripture. Give us a few points of what scripture has to say about the moon.
It doesn't say a whole lot. I mean, you got that reference in Genesis chapter 1. you know, how God created the sun, moon, and stars and made them all visible on the fourth day to us, but what he did with the atmosphere.
It helps us mark time. Right. Is another thing scripture says, I think.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, mark seasons, days, and years. And you got a couple of references in the Psalms.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
No, wait a minute. There's also references in Joel and Revelation.
That's true.
That talks about in the future that the color and the light will be dimmed.
Okay. So the Bible mentions the moon, but it doesn't give us a ton of detail about it. So then we move into the record of nature and we start digging in and being curious, what role does the moon play in helping to sustain life on Earth?
Well, there'd be no life on Earth at all if it wasn't for the moon.
Remarkable to me. Yeah.
And so, and you need the Earth-Moon system to be just right for it to happen. You need a small planet orbited closely by a big moon, and one moon, not more than one.
Okay, so certain parameters related to size and distance. What role does the moon then play in helping to sustain life? I don't think that's going to be immediately obvious to a lot of people.
Well, one thing that's been known about for several decades is having this big moon orbiting closely a small planet stabilizes the rotation axis tilt of the planet. Hmm. So, for example, you've got Mars, which doesn't have any big moon around it. Its rotation axis tilt goes back and forth by 60 degrees. Ours goes back and forth by between 22.1 and 24.5 degrees, plus or minus 1.2 degrees, that's all.
So that stability then has an effect on the planet so that complex life forms like you and I can be able to live there.
It stabilizes the climate. I mean, if you've got the rotation axis tilt doing this, the climate's gonna so radically change. You might have microbes on the planet, but you're not gonna have plants, animals, and humans.
Now, the moon also helps to, I think, regulate the tides.
It does, yes, because it's close enough to us that it causes sufficient tidal interaction, and that actually causes life to proliferate on the continental shelves. And the moon is big enough and massive and close enough that it slows down our rotation axis or rotation period. Keep in mind now, when the Earth and the moon were young, Earth had a rotation rate of about 2 or 3 hours a day. And when it's that rapid, you're not gonna have a climate that's gonna be conducive for the whole planet. And it was crucial, 24 hours is optimal for humans. 25 is a problem, 23 is a problem, 24 is just right. And there's a window in which we humans can exist on Earth, and a very narrow time window, and the moon got us to 24 hours a day, right smack in that time window.
So the moon almost acted like a set of brakes.
Yes.
To slow down the Earth.
It's still operating that way.
Okay.
Right.
Now, you wrote a blog post recently about how the moon's early magnetic field made human existence possible. Tell us about that.
Not only our existence, but all life possible. There wouldn't even be microbes on the planet if this wasn't the case. And what the moon right now has no magnetic field, but measurements that have been made by astronauts and astrophysicists basically tells us when the moon was young, it had a strong magnetic field. Because of the way it formed as a result of a collision with the proto-Earth, it had a hot liquid iron core. Now that by itself won't get you a magnetic field. You gotta find some way of sloshing around that liquid iron core. But it formed at a point where it was much closer, only 18 moon diameters away from the Earth, which meant the tidal forces of the Earth circulated that liquid iron and gave it a magnetic field. Likewise, the moon was close enough to the Earth because at that time, the Earth didn't have a solid core. It was liquid all the way through. And it was the moon being close enough to the Earth that circulated the liquid iron in Earth's core, which meant both bodies had a strong magnetic field when the system was less than a billion years old. And it took the coupling of that magnetic field to produce a coupled magnetosphere that prevented the sun from blasting away all of our atmosphere and water. Because at that point, the sun was throwing out radiation that literally would have wiped out our ocean and wiped out our atmosphere. this couple of magnetosphere prevented that from happening. We don't need the moon today because the sun is a lot less of a problem now than it was when the Earth-Moon system was young. And moreover, there's a new source of convection in the interior of the Earth now that it has a solid core as well as the liquid cores. Everything timed out just right.
So we not only need a just right planet, we need a just right moon, and formed in just the right time, in just the right way.
You need the just right dynamics throughout the entire history, otherwise our planet would be totally barren of life.
That's so good, because I don't think we often reflect on kind of that interdependent nature of things. We just kind of take it for granted. And the moon really is a miracle. It is God's miracle for us.
Well, we only talked about three of the
20. I know.
There's more.
There's so many more. So thank you for helping us think through this topic. Go check out Hugh's blog post. You can search for it at Today's New Reason to Believe.
Hello, Jeff Zwerink here. Welcome to Give and Take, the segment of our show where we look at important scientific discoveries and how they relate to the truth of Christianity. Today, I'm joined by my colleague and friend, Dr. Fuz Rana, and we're going to explore where scientists use intelligent design. Fuzz, good to have you on the show today.
Jeff, thanks for having me.
You know, so intelligent design kind of gets a bad rap out in the scientific community, or at least in the popular science faith discussion, but it does seem like ID comes up in a lot of the things that scientists do. So what is it that brings ID into the discussion for us here today?
Well, you know, SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is a scientific program, and it's predicated on the ability of astronomers to detect evidence for the work of intelligent agency within nature. And so SETI investigators presumably can determine whether electromagnetic radiation emanating from a distant object is due to natural processes or due to an alien civilization that is either intentionally or unintentionally broadcasting those signals.
Well, that seems to be kind of the difficulty of that, is that you're looking at things that are natural, you know, electromagnetic radiation, but also looking for something that's like, okay, what is this that's outside the realm or at least unexpected from a natural perspective? So what if, I mean, scientists have discovered this asteroid that people are claiming has signs of intelligent design. So give us some of the details. What do they find?
Yeah, well, this particular object is nicknamed Oumuamua, and it's an object that went through our solar system in 2017, and there were some measurements recorded in the fall of 2017 on this object. And most people that are astronomers think that this is probably an interstellar asteroid or comet, but A.V. Loeb, who is an astronomer at Harvard University, actually thinks that this is an artifact produced by aliens. Civilizations, a spacecraft, if you will, produced by alien civilizations, based on the features of this particular object that went through our solar system.
Yeah, and if I remember, part of the challenge in doing this is that we kind of found it as it was leaving the solar system, so we didn't get a chance to study it as in-depth as we would. But what are some of the things they found, or that Loeb points to as saying that, yeah, this may be an artifact, an intelligent artifact, as opposed to just a random asteroid that's floating through?
Well, you know, he points out there's a number of features that just simply are outside what you would expect if this object was shaped through natural processes, like the aspect ratio. The size and the dimensions of the object are rather oblong. So it's either like a pancake or like a cigar-shaped object. And he argues, well, there's no mechanism to produce an asteroid or a comet with that shape. Or the reflectivity is outside what you would expect, again, for those kinds of objects.
And so what do you mean by reflectivity? Or kind of flesh that out a little bit, because everything reflects.
The light that's coming off of it is at a higher intensity than you would expect if it was a natural object. Or when it went by the sun, its trajectory changed because of the gravitational influence of the sun, and you would expect that, but it looks like something else added to that change in trajectory, some kind of propulsive force that he argues doesn't have a natural explanation.
Well, so, as, I mean, as a comet is going around, it's going to outgas or something. That would change direction. So is it something beyond that, or what makes it look unusual?
Well, he argues that you don't see anything recorded with Oumuamua that would suggest outgassing took place. If it disintegrates, that would change the trajectory, but there's no evidence in the observations that Oumuamua underwent disintegration. And the change in trajectory was really smooth as opposed to discontinuous. And so he argues that when you put that all together, not only are there not natural process explanations for this behavior, but this looks like an artificial object that went through our solar system.
So I want to kind of look at the intelligent design aspect in a second, but is this something that is outside the bounds of explaining naturally, or is it just something that it's highly unusual, and so that it's, and that's what makes the difficulty? It's unusual, but could be intelligent as well.
Yeah, and it depends who you read on this. Okay. I think most astronomers say it's unusual, but not outside the bounds of what natural processes could do, whereas A.V. Loeb is taking the position that this really doesn't fit what natural process mechanisms could produce. And then he also points out that he was involved in a project called the Starshot Initiative, where they were proposing the building of what are called light sails, which would be these objects that would be similar in size to Oumuamua that would use the sun energy from the sunlight to propel it through space close to, about a 25% of the speed of light. And so he argues that Oumuamua fits all the characteristics you would expect if it was a light sail.
So not only do we wrestle with actually explaining it just within our normal distribution of things, it also has characteristics of things that we would be building. It also adds to the evidence for it.
Yes. So to me, what's intriguing is really not whether or not Oumuamua is an alien artifact, a spacecraft of sorts, but rather what is the reasoning that A.V. Loeb is using to make his case? And it's really natural process mechanisms don't seem to be able to account for this system. There's an artificiality to it. And then we know that if we would try to build something like it, that we do have the capability of designing something that would behave exactly the way that Oumuamua behaves.
Well, that seems to be, often the claim of intelligent design is it's like, well, it just kind of ends the scientific conversation. We don't know how to investigate anymore. This sort of reasoning that you're describing seems to open up the possibility of, can we look for more of these things? Or, obviously this one's too far gone, but it seems to open up the possibility of further scientific investigation. Is that kind of a key of how you do intelligent design in a way that advances the scientific enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, I think, what he's done is really very instructive for those of us who are trying to make a scientific case that certain features in nature are the product of a creator's handiwork. So, like, in my area of expertise, biochemistry, we've argued that biochemical systems can't be explained through chemical evolution. Mm-hmm. We talk about the fact that these systems have the appearance of design, using kind of a watchmaker reasoning to establish that. And then we talk about the fact that to go in the lab and to create protocells, the beginnings of biochemical systems requires intelligent agency. And so the argument that we make for, again, intelligent design is, in effect, the same line of reasoning that A.V. Loeb uses. And so his case is a scientific case. So my point would be ID should also be treated as a scientific proposal.
Well, thanks, Fuzz. I really appreciate your comments. As we look out in the cosmos and in the cells and everywhere, scientists really do use intelligent design reasoning to explain why things work. In fact, that helps advance the scientific cause, particularly when we're looking at objects like Oumuamua, and I would argue even when we're looking at biochemistry, we see evidence of design. I would encourage you to go to reasons.org and check out Fuzz's latest article on this. It's called "Does Astroarchaeology Appeal to Intelligent Agency?" It will equip you to understand how using ID helps explain this object that passed through our solar system, but how we can also use it to see God's fingerprints that He has written into creation for us to discover.
That does it for us this week on 2019. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that it helped to equip you to share your faith with confidence and compassion. And I think maybe we learned that we don't really need these,
yeah,
right?
We don't really need these after all, you know. But you know what we do need is to hear from you. So find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at 2819 Show. Be sure to like us and comment.
Send us pictures of your tinfoil hats, though. We'll see how creative everyone can be, right?
Yeah, we can do, like, tinfoil berets, tinfoil, like, 10-gallon hats.
All right, I'm going to be really disappointed if I don't see these pictures on our threads. So
right.
Do it. But if you like the audio version of 2819, so you don't get to see the awesome hats, you can still get that while you're on the go. We're on most major podcast services. Just search Reasons to Believe Podcast.
See you next week.
Bye.